Reading from the Bhakti Sutras, Chapter 1, Sutra 1. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Atato Bhaktim Vyakyasyamaha. One second. Now, therefore, I will try to explain the process of devotional service. Om Yana Timurandasya. Jnananjana Salakaya Taksurunvatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanchakopa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayebhacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Well, greetings from Newburgh. I'm with the family of the Raval family, where I this year we didn't have our yearly festival, but I'm staying with those who know him. It's a joint family of five brothers that live together with their father and all their families. So you get the benefit of a joint family and the shared activities, and one kitchen makes things easier. But it's also quite a busy place, and they have a temple room right now. They're having a kirtan, and there's a samskara. Because there's so many children and friends' children. There's a samskara for the first grain ceremony. And samskara literally means, samskara is impressions in the consciousness. They can be good or bad. But samskara is a ritualistic performance. Are certain ceremonial or ritualistic activities that create good and powerful impressions in the consciousness, and one is the first grain ceremony. And the child does it 6 months. At that time, he usually chooses. They set out the books, and they set out a plate of money, and the child is put in the middle and see which he crawls to, which indicates his inclination. But the main point is the child gets the impression of community. And community means love and expectations. And they go together. Because the most powerful imprints for a proper commitment are those that are made before those one loves or one feels loved from. And that's one of the reasons of community. Community basically socializes someone according to the values that the parents have deemed proper, and hope if it comes in a whatever culture it is. So naturally, the parents want to socialize the child. It's not a bad term. It just means to create the proper impressions for the values that they hold dear, rather than leave it up to whim. So in the Vedic culture, there were specific ceremonies. In fact, this weekend, I'm going to head up on Friday, a Kachukar Nitya Seva coming with their new child. They're now in Austin, Texas. Not now, but they're living there while he's getting his doctorate, and they're coming up with their new child, Valentino, to have that particular function and ceremony. So the family here invited one friend. They have little programs at their house, to have the ceremony. And, of course, the system of time is IST, Indian Stretchable Time. So I said I'll be here for 2 days, and that the only time in which I'm not available to do this, I don't even know why particularly I should be good, but they have that respect. In that culture, that's one, again, that's a cultured person. Culture means what real culture is an environment that creates favorable impressions in the consciousness to help one communicate better, learn better, and love or relate better. Proper culture, but there's something about so anyway, they want, it means something to them, the family. I don't even know the family, but that a sadhu or a sannyasi or a monk or the family priest gives the first grains. But as so happens, everyone's late and it's right on the time of the class, and they just came up. I'm trying to give you a vision of what's going on here. So I told them, normally we do the kirtan, I'd be there. When it comes time, I'll go down and just give the grains, and you could kind of all come with me. It'll just be a few minutes. But anyway, the Narada Bhakti Sutras, I'm hearing there's such loud kirtan here, which is nice. Makes it a little more difficult to concentrate. One of the unique features of this class is that I'm doing it in so many different places and environments. It's such a loud kirtan. Rama, Hari Rama. So atta means now, and what a sutra is a it's a code. English, I guess you call it an aphorism, where short phrases are impacted with a lot of meaning. It's actually an effective way to memorize things and to meditate on things and to categorize things. So the sutras are very, very terse. I mean, the Yoga Sutras has about kind of 700 words. In general, you won't find a sutra more than 6 words. And the person writing the sutra, because he needs to pack information into a few amount of words, assumes a frame of reference for the audience. That's why do we explain things in so many words? Because the audience doesn't have the frame of reference to understand it. So, and therefore there are usually many, many commentaries written on it. The Narada Bhakti Sutras doesn't have commentaries. It's not... You know, in the Yoga Sutras means this, that there wasn't really a school of yoga before the Yoga Sutras, basically, a separate school. It was knowledge of psychology or how the mind works that was throughout the Vedic literatures. And then when people started to focus on it, it became a particular school. But before the Narada Bhakti Sutras, Bhakti was already a very, very established school. based on the Bhagavad, mostly the Bhagavatam. The natural commentary on the Bhagavad, then there were, of course, then there's the Vedanta Sutra. So there is the Vedanta Sutra is actually probably the sutra most connected with bhakti tradition, and then there's the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is the commentary, the unpacking of the Vedanta Sutras. But Srila Prabhupada did do a commentary. He was there's a whole story. Someone asked him to do it. In fact, Tara, you're on the phone, so I know you're one of my audience. But the commentary was finished by Prabhupada. Did the first 18 verses, and the commentary was finished by Satsrup Das Goswami. You were at his house and you took breakfast that day. So, and I had the idea that there really needs to be a book of the philosophy of bhakti for my own outreach, as I give lectures in the yoga world, and I have I'm giving seminars on bhakti. I'm doing a 15-hour seminar in New York in September, and I've kind of got an idea of how to present it in a lecture form, but I thought the way to present it in terms of a book is it can be done within the sutras. The ideas I have how to communicate bhakti can be done within the sutras of the Narada Bhakti Sutras. Incredible kirtan going downstairs. So I did a little bit of last week, but I really decided in the middle of this week that this is what I'll be doing now for the next couple of months. So let me go over again the first text, and just generally each word is impacted with a lot of meaning, just like in the Vedanta Sutra, atato brahma jigyasa. Atato, now, always indicates an urgency. And one of the urgencies is when you don't have a lot of time to do something. And atato now generally indicates the urgency of human life. If you can just meditate, we have to get we have to get a vision of our life in this particular way. If we can meditate, really, that we're not the body, and that we have experienced 8,400,000 species of life, and somehow by the ahankara or the ego, our consciousness is limited to a particular body we have that we identify with in this particular life. We are not these bodies. But we don't act and we don't see that way. So just from practically, you know, we have duties in relationship to the body that we have to fulfill if we want to ultimately transcend the body. Because if you renounce artificially, you think of the thing that you are renouncing even more. So it's not about renunciation, but the same thing. Sense, you should have a philosophical concept that you're not the body. Brahmanda Brahmate Konya Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Pasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Bid. We've been wandering from life to life, to species of species, to universe, Guru Krishna Pasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Bid. And then by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, some incredible mercy, we get the seed of devotion. What is the seed of devotion? It's the concept that we are part of God and we're meant for his service. It's not only the concept, but it's the experience of doing so. The experience of the soul, which is super sensual and beyond any type of hope or pleasure we can have experienced before. So it's this window of time called human form of life, and therefore a tato indicates incredible significance, incredible urgency. It also indicates the conviction of the author on the relevance and importance of the knowledge that will be coming to the problems of human life that one is facing, and the problems of life that one is facing that one has an opportunity to solve now. Srila Prabhupada said, what is the difference between human life and animal life? Well, he said, the human being can inquire why I am suffering. And that's such an incredible dynamic, because when you ask the question, why I am suffering, then the next thing you ask is, what did I do wrong? And then if you take a step back in a reductionist mode, then you ask, what should I be doing? And then you come to the point, well, who am I? What am I made of and what am I made for that determines my duty? So this process of inquiry, it's there in human life only. And just by that word, atato, therefore, now, it indicates an incredible significance to create that sense of importance and urgency in one's mind. Therefore, now, for what? For bhakti, for devotion. And then bhakti means, well, this is the path that's being recommended. And vyakhyasyamaha. And therefore, we shall explain bhakti. Why? Because of this urgency. This urgency that you actually have the facility where you can achieve perfection. And here is the path that can give perfection. In so many ways. I mean, for one thing, without bhakti, whatever practice one is doing, the practice becomes limited to a desire for individual accomplishment, and therefore reinforces the ego that spiritual life is meant to untie. So even if one is adopting another spiritual path, it's going to be dependent on bhakti. All paths are dependent on bhakti. Because without that sense of selflessness, the path just reinforces the ego. And without bhakti, bhakti means kripa or mercy. Because bhakti means love, and love means there's a reciprocation in relationship. So without some reciprocation from God, from the divine, we can't achieve perfection in any path. It is, if you actually study the Yoga Sutras and see the level of mastery over the mind that one must have to achieve perfection, if you actually just study that point, how deep meditation has to go. Meditation ultimately means there is not even another thought in one's mind other than the thought, I am against selfishness and sense gratification. And that thought has to go in yoga. And that's when yoga begins. And then one meditates on the object, and then it's the object without conception. Then that goes beyond object without conception to the elements of the object. Then it goes beyond the experience of the elements of the object. It goes to the point of prakriti, or the source of matter. And then there's further transcendence. That's why it says Ishvara Pranidhan and why it's so stressed, really stressed. If you think how terse the verses are, think of the amount of verses that are dedicated to discuss. Because the object is not just a meditational prop. The object is live. The object is an object of relationship which can reciprocate your love and has the power to help you overcome the obstacles to what you want to achieve. And without some power to help one overcome the obstacles to what one wants to achieve, it is not possible to achieve success in any process. So there's the reciprocation of the object, there's the discouragement of the sense of ego and the sense of the sense of appropriating the energy of God for one's own selfishness rather than for serving God, which means to serve the universal interest. That's also going to be discussed in the next verse. That bhakti appears as love of God. Devotion appears as love of God. Because real love is love of God. Because love of God is inclusive of everyone else. And therefore, without coming to the point of love of God, or connecting your individual love to God, there will also be an element of selfishness. So here, now, it's so important. You are coming to the point of selflessness, which is self-realization. Self-realization is selflessness. Without selflessness, without the mood of bhakti, there is no question of self-realization. And bhakti means for God. It's love expanded, repose to the greatest thing. And when you have people that are so-called devotees and have a sectarianism, it's not that you can't have a conception that you hold dearly. But if you don't see the universal principle of religion, which is surrender to God, and it's Ishvara Pranidhan, it's not a particular faith with a particular color and a particular dress and manifest at a particular time. If your worship of God becomes degraded to sectarianism, where you can only see the dress and the time and the rituals of your own practice as that principle of love of God, and can't appreciate or see it in other forms, and in fact feel threatened by other forms or even hateful of other forms, or profess that allegiance to a particular line takes precedence over the substance of a practitioner in whatever line he's in, then it's not going to be real bhakti. In Vaishnavism, they have bahagrahi and saragahi. Sara means the cream, the essence. Real Vaishnava sees the cream or the essence. From Prabhupada's point, he says now bhakti also, because in that sense, bhakti is the culmination of self-realization. And real bhakti is when that nature of the soul, which is selfless, becomes reflected in the mind. And therefore, real bhakti, where you're really feeling the soul, is the culmination of self-realization. And therefore, one who comes to that point, regardless of what position they are in, then it's considered that they've already achieved bathing in all holy rivers, read all the scriptures. How wonderful. Even if one is purely chanting Jiva Gre on the jiva, on the tongue, one name is hanging on the tongue that's said with love and devotion, that's reflecting the nature of the soul. And that person is considered to have already bathed in all the holy rivers, read all the scriptures. Spiritual life, spiritual advancement means a heart filled of devotion. It doesn't mean that one doesn't read and study. Because without hearing, we will never even come to the platform of surrender, which is opening the door to devotion. And the shastras, bhakti shastras, are a pure expression of love of Godhead. So when one reads those scriptures in a purified state, he's experiencing his love for God. The Prabhupada quotes from the Bhagavad Gita. Brahma Bhuta Pasanatman, Asochati Nakanchati, Samasarveshu Bhuteshu, Mad Bhakti Labhati Parim. Brahma Bhuta Pasanatman, Asochati Nakanchati, Samasarveshu. That when you become beyond everything, Brahma Bhuta, when you're Brahman, Asochati Nakanchati, you're not hankering ignorance. You know, you're not hankering passion. You're not lamenting ignorance. Samasarveshu Bhuteshu. And you see all living entities as equal. Mad bhaktim labhati parim. Then you come to bhakti. Of course, that nature of bhakti can come into the heart at any time. But if it does, it's significant. And people who are coming to a spiritual path, they have to really introspect. You can't be hateful in the name of religion. Then you haven't come to first base. Speaking about love, speaking about devotion, I was in the city yesterday. I had some wonderful programs. Last Sunday, at the teacher training up, I give a lecture at the teacher training up in where I live near Hudson. And one lady came who had a yoga school in Queens, New York. And somehow we really bonded. And she started coming to my classes in Yoga Maya and came to the kirtans and asked me to speak at her yoga studio. I did that Sunday, and it was really nice because usually yoga is really a certain type of professional people, a little bit more money class generally. I don't know, this was, she was a lawyer and she was working in Queens and she had to go to Manhattan to practice yoga. So she thought, why didn't she open up a yoga studio and wound up quitting her job as a lawyer And it was really nice. It was multi-ethnic. And it was, it wasn't like, you know, like when I did Kirtan, about two-thirds of the people chanted. The whole evening was really a success. But it wasn't that kind of people that were into the Kirtan. It was the people in the neighborhood. So there were Chinese, there were Middle Eastern people there. There were there was a New York City fireman. There was, you know, kind of a good balance of men and women. Usually yoga studios are mostly women. And there were people from South America. There were Israeli. It was really nice, too. And then deviating a little bit from my talk, because I usually do give a little background, but then they had a 7-course vegan feast that they made there. And I wound up staying for a couple of hours, even though the lecture was an hour and a half, and I'll speak there again. And then from there, I'm invited to, same thing, a guy opened, Puerto Rican man opened up a yoga center in the Bronx. You know, a little bit something new. So it was just nice to see the richness of ethnicity. And in fact, the lady's father was from Egypt. And the mother, and they were there. More of a pious Muslims. But probably a little bit more of the intellectual or at least upper class. But the father, one of the things he does is he's an, I think, imam. He's a Muslim priest. So the father, I guess, you know, came to the lecture. Couldn't meet a nicer man. Honestly speaking, you couldn't meet a nicer man. I mean, and he really appreciated the lecture. He saw the universality of what I was saying. I didn't even know who he was or he was a mom. But one of the things I was speaking about, because it was such a multi-ethnic group, was somehow, I was talking about karma. But I was talking about the universality of certain spiritual principles, and I discussed religion itself. And it's the nature of the soul to surrender to God. And he came up to me and he said, thank you for that. Because I try to counsel many Muslim youth and try to explain to them that the goal is love, but you have to come through the door of surrender. And you said the same thing. So, and getting back to this particular point here, that, you know, the how bhakti is elevated, because again, it's the path of grace. And what do you want to achieve in bhakti? Bhakti is not just self-realization; it's self-realization in relationship to God realization. You want to realize the divine because we're part of the divine and we're meant to love the divine. But you can only know the divine by the revelation of the divine. As you never know a person unless you love a person, unless you have a relationship with the person, unless you like a person. And unless you want to serve that person's desires in some way, you cannot know the person because his essence, every person's essence, is within their own mind and consciousness. No one else can have that unless the person gives that. Therefore, Prabhupada also quotes Bhaktyamam Abhijanati. Krishna says, only by bhakti, bhakto sime sakacheti, rahasamyet, that this secret of that absolute reality is known to you, Arjuna, in the Bhagavad Gita, because you are my devotee and you are my friend. So, another thing Prabhupada discusses that's very, very nice, he discusses evolution, the 8,100,000 species and coming to the human form of life. And in the human form of life, civilized and uncivilized, unless you have yam and niyam, moral principles in relationship to how you control the mind with others, and how you control the mind in relationship to yourself, unless you have moral principles, you're not even civilized human being. And then among civilized human beings, then you come to a yoga ladder, which culminates in bhakti. As Prabhupada often says in Bhagavad Gita, he said in the Bhagavad Gita, and I really love, the perfected state of the living entity is called a devotee. Perfect means pure. Pure means unalloyed. Nothing external to that thing. So when you take away everything that's external to yourself, you're left with a loving being that's meant to serve. That's your dharma. That's your essence. To the perfected state. So this first verse is expressing that. Now, therefore, Yoga Sutras, Vedanta Sutras, most schools have some form of codes or aphorisms. They all begin with this now. The urgency, the significance, and the promotion of the particular path. Now I will explain the process of devotional service. Now that you've come to a certain point of receptivity, when you've come to a certain point of frustration, understanding that you can never find ultimate happiness in prakriti or matter, because it is temporary and it is not under your control. You can never get ultimate happiness from something that's temporary and not under your control. Now, when you have realized that, give your heart to bhakti, surrender to bhakti. So, I think for today, that's what I'm going to cover on the first verse. And next time, I'll start the second verse. But it was good doing the first verse again. And for my own writing, I really got now a hint of how to link these sutras together. Really discussing, without a practice or path of love and selflessness, you cannot become perfect in self-realization. And bhakti is the path of purely selflessness. It's not mixed with anything else. And therefore, if one has material aspirations, don't go to the bhakti shastras, because they don't fulfill your material aspirations. They don't give you a path on that. Go to some other book for that. They'll give you a path how to be selfless and loving. And therefore, at the beginning of the Bhagavatam, it says, Dharma kaitava projita tra paramo namatsara nam satam. That it kicks out any kind of spirituality that's materially motivated. And therefore, the path of bhakti satam, the near Matsara Anam, it's for those who are near Matsara, those who have no hate. And it's very subtle what hate is. Hate is to dominate. And there are religious processes that tell you how to enjoy more. Okay, I'm going to stop here now for any questions. Would anybody like to ask any questions? Would someone like to say hello to
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Gail.
Okay, Gail, thank you. Otherwise, I was having that anxiety attack that I've been talking to the wall again. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You have a question?
No, but thank you for class.
Okay, good. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Rajarade.
Rajarade, thank you. Thank you.
Maharaj, today is my son's birthday, Kiriti's birthday. He wants to take blessings from you. So.
He wants to take what?
Blessings from you.
Your son's
birthday.
Wonderful. Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Oh, your birthday today.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, I pray that you have another good year in devotional service and do well in your school, your studies, your bhakti, and everything. Okay? Thank you.
Maharaj, I'm going to New Vrindavan tomorrow for a Krishna camp.
Are you? Are you going to do some drama?
Huh? No.
No? Isn't that what you like to do?
No, it's just like a camp.
Okay. But it's a Krishna camp, right? How long will you spend there? Okay. Well, have a nice time, okay? And I'll see you when you get back. Great. Happy birthday. Everyone give blessings. Okay.
Thank you, Mother.
Anybody else like? Thank you. You have wonderful children. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna.
Who's that? Is that Kumar?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Yes, Maharaj. Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Kumar, thank you for coming on all the classes. I really appreciate it. Good. Anybody else like to say hello? Anybody else? Okay, well, anyway, for today, I'll have to go down now and do the grain ceremony, but thanks for coming on. Tara, it was great that you could come on and join us. Very well. Okay. Bunch of culpa to this doctor.